by November 7th. For details and to reserve tickets for the special celebration and awards dinner, visit hpjc.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. Happy Halloween. If you're going to call in, only treats, no tricks, okay? Only treats. I just want to take a moment to say it's really, really hard to prepare for this show when your internet connection is wonky. I have literally been working off my smartphone because my computer at home isn't getting an internet connection. And, of course, my phone can work with or without. It's just better with. So I haven't been able to post anything on my blog about today's show, and I haven't been able to make an announcement on Twitter about today's show, or at least I haven't had time. Anyway, open forum. Phone number is 713-526-5738. A couple of things that I did notice is Trump and the RNC are being sued for charges of voter intimidation. The Democratic National Committee is suing the Republican National Committee because the Democrats claim that they're in collusion with Trump in attempted voter suppression in specific areas. The RNC is under a consent decree going back to like 1981. You know, conservatives win at any cost. So the RNC is saying, we have nothing to do with Trump. We are absolutely not participating in voter suppression, which to me is a little cognitively dissonant, because on the one hand, they're supporting Trump. Trump is their nominee. They have been collecting money with Trump, for Trump. So I think they have an uphill battle. And then you have four different Democratic state parties suing their Republican state parties in Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, Ohio. They're specifically suing the Donald Trump campaign for attempted voter intimidation in their states. If you want to know what a Trump presidency would be like, all you have to do is look at the Philippines. I honestly believe that. This is a guy who was running against multiple opponents. He won a plurality of the vote. It's really a toss-up whether he's the Philippine Trump or the Philippine Paul LePage, because he has similarities and commonalities with both of them, in terms of both craziness and policies and authoritarian inclinations. Rodrigo Duterte won the Philippine presidency with 39% of the vote, which is right around how Paul LePage keeps getting elected governor. Multiple candidates. I really hate plurality wins for political office. Let's see what else. The Iraqi mission in Mosul, apparently they finally got into the eastern outskirts of the city limits. So we'll see how that goes. Oh, here's a good one. Going back to Trump, apparently he is being sued by one of his pollsters, people that do polls for him. There's a bill of $766,756 that apparently Trump is refusing to pay. Deadbeat Don. You've got, this is actually really, really sad. One of the protesters at the North Dakota pipeline site by the name of Red Fawn Fallis is being charged with attempted murder. The police were trying to clear the area of demonstrators, and she resisted, and in the middle of a scuffle, she fired three shots at two officers. None of the shots hit, but now she's in deep doo-doo. It's, you know, sometimes I tell people that in reality, all of us are just like one moment away from catastrophe in our lives. You never know. It's, you know, it could be a car accident. You hit somebody on the road. Somebody hits you. You just never know. Life is like that. Okay, 713-526-5738 is the call-in number, open forum. We have had early voting. I voted the second day of early voting. I made essentially an election date with my wife. We went to our early voting site. We got there 10 minutes before it opened at 7:50 a.m. By then, there were already like, I don't know, 25 or 30 people online, and by the time the doors opened, it was probably up to about 50. So I think early voting is really, really busy. Absolutely early vote. HarrisVotes.com, TexasVotes.gov. Find out where your early voting polling place is. That is the absolute best way to go. A, you can go to any early voting place. You don't have to find your specific voting precinct. And B, if you have any kind of a problem with your ID, if you're early voting, you have time to work it out. Early voting is going until November 4th. Go to the websites, find your places, find the times that they're open. Early vote, early vote, early vote. If you wait until election day, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be a madhouse. Okay, I'm going to take my first caller now. Open line, 713-526-5738. And my first caller is Arg. Halloweeny. So,
sounds like Captain Crunch's parrot.
Yeah. How are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
How you doing? I just called real quick to say that I am a Clinton supporter, and I am a truck driver, so I have lots of time to listen to a lot of the news and current events and all that's been going on. I do feel bad that they've that it's resorted to a lot of mudslinging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that I wouldn't have expected that much from Clinton, but I know that I understand that she had to defend herself, and she kind of fell, I would say, was kind of drawn into the mudslinging.
Well, you and, have
a,
you have
a, I have a lot of faith. I have a lot of faith in her experience and a lot of what she would have to decide or on her, say, her decisions. I have a lot of trust of confidence in her and how she'll run the country, and I'm pretty sure she'll win.
I think that, with the possible exception of Dwight Eisenhower, I think she is probably the most trained, most prepared potential president in at least 150 years, with the possible exception of Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's really a statement.
Now, unfortunately, at this day and time, there's still people that would feel that they don't want a woman president, no matter how good she is. And that's a big factor to a lot of macho guys.
I think
I'm not one of them.
You know, my mom is 94. She lives in southeastern Florida. So she's in a conservative state surrounded by conservative media. Apparently, even though she listens to news at home, she always has a TV or a radio on. She, you know, is a sort of a presence in her place. So she listens to the news. She hasn't heard that Hillary has like an 87% probability of winning currently. She hasn't heard that Trump has almost no path to a majority in the Electoral College. She hasn't heard that the Democrats have any hope. This is media concentration at work. This is corporate conservative media concentration at work. The only news she gets that gives her any hope is when I talk to her, which is really sad. And being 94 and hanging around with people who are a minimum of 55, mostly 60s and 70s, she keeps saying, I'm just afraid that people won't vote for a woman, that they'll vote for Trump because they wouldn't vote for a woman. But I think that's more a generational issue. I think when you start getting under 40, the under 40s, I think that culturally they're what we might call more advanced in that way, that they don't see gender as being one of the primary considerations.
My older brother, he's very religious. Mm-hmm. And he told me, no, God would not want a woman in charge of the country. Again, he's old-fashioned. But yet we were raised by a mother who single-handedly raised us, and our dad was just in and out. You know, he lived however he wanted to. He wouldn't contribute at all, and I mean at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
But I always just remind him of that. So don't sit there and tell me women can't. Our mom did it. Lots of women have done it. So you know, but I do understand it. A lot of Pentecostal kind of rules and laws, and they just, oh no, women cannot, you know, preach in the church, or they have their place.
Yeah.
And again, it's old fashioned. I don't buy that, because our mom, bless her heart, she definitely made sure that we were okay.
You know, I have talked a number of times about what I've come to feel is the 40-20-40 rule, which is 40% of the voters will always vote conservative, will always vote Republican in this case. 40% of the voters will always vote liberal, in this case mostly Democrat. And then you've got 20% in the middle. Half of that 20% leans either Republican or Democrat, again, split roughly down the middle. So really, 10% of the voters are up for grabs. 10% of all the voters are really deciding the elections, which is why elections are normally won by 3, 4, 5, 6 points.
Okay.
And I think your brother is an example of one of those 40%. You know, whatever his reasoning is, we can disagree with his foundation for his reasoning, but it is what it is, and he'll vote the way he'll vote. And I believe that 40-20-40 rule. Now, there's another thing that has recently come to my attention that's caused me to revise that a little bit. You know, we've got all of these racists and white supremacists and white nationalists that have come out of the woodwork for Trump. They've always been there. We just haven't heard from them very much. It's been sort of an underground movement. Now, we've talked a lot, I think, most political shows at some point talk a lot about the fact that the best turnout you can ever hope for in a presidential election is maybe 60 or 65% of the eligible voters. And it's like, why can't we get that other 30 or 40% to the polls? And now I'm beginning to understand that in that 30 or 40%, there's a fraction of extreme rightists, white supremacists, etc., and a fraction on the other side that are very strongly socialist to the point of being communistic or anarchistic, and even revolutionary in the literal sense. And those two extreme wings, they don't show up because they feel there's no one to vote for. Trump has given some of those folks on the right a reason to show up, and it'll be really, really interesting to see how that looks at the polls.
I cannot see any reason, from what I've gathered, why anybody would want to vote. But I do understand those that are, you know, that's, like you said, that all that the right side definitely can see no problem voting for him. Personally, he would definitely do a lot of damage to our country.
Yep, I agree.
Providing he gets elected.
But you know, one of the things I've come to understand in my old age is, there are things that are the way they are, and people that think the way they think, and it would be great if we could understand why that is, but you don't have to understand it to accept the reality of it, and this is just the reality of it. You and I can't understand it, but these people are there nonetheless, and their minds have taken them to the places they are, and we can't grasp it, but we have to recognize it and figure out how society deals with it.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I appreciate your calling. Arg.
Thank you.
Arg. Okay, take care. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you,
appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Arg. I may do that for the rest of the night. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls. You can help support KPFT anytime by going to kpft.org, clicking on the tip jar, and hopefully in the drop-down menu, choosing Think Wing Radio, and then contribute whatever you feel you can. Also, I have a website, thinkwingradio.com. Not tonight, because I had no internet connection to speak of, but normally you can go there and listen to audios of shows, just not tonight's show, audios of shows, links to topics I've talked about. I actually put a lot of work into that website, and it would be great if you guys would just look it over and see if there's anything there for you. You can also follow me on Twitter, at ThinkWing Radio. Okay, I've done my intermission stuff, so now it's time for... Oh, Bob, you have something you want to say?
Yes, thank you. I would just like to acknowledge Bubba.
Bubba.
Up in Liberty, yeah, who said he was going to tune in tonight.
Oh,
and,
welcome, Bubba.
Listen to your show, and... he is the brother of Wesley, who I write to from time to time. And
Wesley, if you're listening,
today.
Hello?
Yes. So go right ahead.
Okay. Very good. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. Next up is Greg, which I guess if you were to turn it into an anagram could be grrr.
Yeah, grrr.
It's Halloween, man. We can play. All right, yeah. What's on your mind, Greg?
I don't know how many people have gotten the latest issue of Rolling Stone, the one that's just come out, and they did a great piece on Donald Trump and about some of the people who are voting for him and who support him and what's happened to the Republican Party. And they said one of the things that they brought up and have brought up more than enough times is that how the Republican Party basically has played these people for at least a generation or better.
Yeah.
And how now what's happened is, while all of the things that have happened to the economy and the society were going on where these people have felt disenfranchised, abandoned, left out, they sort of still talk the way that they do, and that now it's kind of come home to them that all they're getting is an empty suit now. And it's amazing how in the 70s and 80s and 90s, when all these things are going on that we talk about, whether it's income inequality or, as we've known recently, stagnant wages or the loss of low-skilled jobs, this is a party that has never understood that it's not about just the same cliches, bromides you've been saying for 30 to 40 years. And at least... they're going to have to confront some very major issues of their own making in their own party that they've created. Because you've made these people want to have someone that they can blame or point the finger at, and then now it's backfiring on you. And in a way, you're getting what you deserve.
You know, I don't disagree with you, but I want to put a little bit more context around what you're saying, at least my personal opinion of what the context is. Political parties, whatever they call themselves, at the end of the day, are the people that adhere to them. And one of the tricky things about a political party is there generally is not a litmus test to join. You know, if you joined the Nazi Party or the Communist Party at the times they were in power in Europe, they weren't open to everybody. You had to be a devoted communist or a devoted Nazi to join the party. You couldn't just sign up. In the United States, anybody who wants to become a Republican can call themselves a Republican, and anybody who wants to be a Democrat can call themselves a Democrat. One of the best examples of this problem for the Democratic side is the Lyndon LaRoucheites. Lyndon LaRouche's a crazy, but they're registered Democrats in places where you have to declare a party affiliation. They run for office. We've had LaRouche's run for office here in Houston as Democrats. One of them tried to run to be chair of the Democratic Party in Harris County. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, the parties are simply the will of the people that join them. If enough LaRouche's joined the Democratic Party would be a LaRouche party. And, you know, then you'd be saying, oh, my God, you've got all these crazies in the Democratic Party. And, you know, they earned it because they let them take over. The Republicans right now, because you've got a lot of people who are conservative and more so. They don't feel they have a home in the Democratic Party currently. You know, 50, 70 years ago, it might have been different, but now they don't. So the Republicans, on the one hand, you're right. They have appealed to these people. They have made explicit and implicit promises to these people, whether it's the religious right or the racist right, what used to be Dixiecrats, all of these disenfranchised conservatives, they felt that they found an umbrella under the Republican Party. Now, you can argue this two ways. You can argue that the Republican leadership was very happy to embrace anybody that would become a voter and help them put go into and stay in the majority. Or, you know, you could make an opposite argument that while that's true, to some extent, while they did sort of reap what they sowed, on the other hand, anybody who wanted to join could join and do the same thing. The Democrats, to some extent, you know, there are Democrats, liberals, progressives, who either openly or not so openly sort of get excited about now the crises and fractures that are occurring within the Republican Party. But here's something to think about. You have liberal Republicans, real liberal Republicans. They're not really a good fit for the Democrats, but they're a horrible fit for the Republicans. If those people decide to jump ship and become Democrats, that will change the complexion of the Democratic Party. It unavoidably will. So on the one hand, it's like, yes, let's attract some of those liberal Republicans to the party, but there will be I'm going to say this advisedly, there will be a price to pay, in a sense, because keeping those people is going to pull issues and policies to the right of center toward these people. So this all gets very, very tricky.
It does. And I don't know if you heard it. I was watching Rachel Maddow tonight, and she had mentioned that the Ku Klux Klan in Georgia has been leaving papers, newspapers, with the headline that they're endorsing Donald Trump.
I think that the fact of that is old news. The new thing you're talking about, I haven't heard about because no internet connection at home.
Yeah, they mentioned that tonight. She mentioned that tonight on her show. And then I'm not surprised about some of the white supremacist groups. And then there's a guy who was part of a white supremacist group, apparently in Utah, that has been doing things like he's contributed more than $1,500 to the Trump campaign, and he was going to be a Trump delegate at the Republican National Convention. And when they found that this guy was part of a white supremacist group, they took his credentials to be a delegate away.
Yeah, but it's really kind of a don't ask, don't tell thing, isn't it? As long as you don't make it open. I mean, there were white supremacists there. There were white nationalists there. There were racists there. It's just if you don't make a big thing about it, just, you know, don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, probably. And it's sad that this campaign's degenerated into this kind of stuff. But I think some people, not everybody, I think some people are just scared of the way America is becoming more diverse.
Yep.
And they're kind of uncomfortable with it.
Yep.
And that's something that if any of us have any questions about what makes a good American a good person is, how would we feel if we were one of the groups that some people were targeting? How would we feel and react if we were considered the other? You know, whether it's Muslims, us as African Americans, people with disabilities, how would anybody feel about that?
Well,
how would we react to it?
Let me tell you something. I don't consider myself an Anglo. People that group me into Anglos, I always correct them because I'm annoying that way. All of my heritage, at least going back for a few generations that I know of, is all East Central and Eastern European. Little Russian, little Ukrainian, a little Austrian, a little Hungarian, but all on that side of Europe. So for someone to call me Anglo is just wrong. I'm white. I don't look Slavic or Nordic, but, you know, I'm white, but I'm Jewish. Now, I have the advantage being Jewish that as long as I don't tell people I'm Jewish, I'm white. People always, after I tell them I'm Jewish, people say, yeah, you do kind of look Jewish, but that's like an after-the-fact decision. On the other hand, when you're talking about people that don't have to self-identify, to find prejudice against them. I mean, I've met anti-Semites. I once did work for someone who was anti-Semitic. She was openly anti-Semitic. She still hired me to do stuff because she liked my work, but there was no question she was anti-Semitic. But that's because she knew I was Jewish, because it had come up. If you're brown, or if you're black, or if you have a golden complexion of East Asian, you can't hide that. So you're identified before you open your mouth. And that's a different kind of exposure to prejudice. So, I mean, there's both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of the movies that I like to point out to people is something called A Gentleman's Agreement, or Gentleman's Agreement. It has Gregory Peck and some other noteworthy actors. And it's really, it was made in like 1946, after the Second World War, after the exposure of the concentration camps and the Final Solution and the Holocaust. So, you know, there was a lot of Western guilt about the fact that so many people had been exterminated. And while the movie itself is about anti-Semitism, The Gentleman's Agreement is kind of a don't ask, don't tell. In a broader sense, if you see that movie today, it's not just about anti-Semitism. It can be about any kind of prejudice, any kind of silent consensus among one group to discriminate against another group. And I've emphasized this to people, say, oh, well, it's just about Jews. Yes, but no. It's about any group where there is a consensus to discriminate against them. And discrimination seems to be a normal part of the human condition. Gary, who's going to be next up, I'm sure he's agreeing with me right now. Prejudice is part of the human condition. He'll say it's in the DNA. He's probably to some extent right. It's cultural, too. But yeah, I mean, what you're saying, and I'm sort of just rambling now, but what you're saying about having to face that and having to understand that at some point, white people are going to be the majority minority. And that's, you know, within possibly even my lifetime. You know, by the year 2030, 2050, whites are going to be a majority minority. They'll be like 48 or 49% of the population. And there are people, especially people over 40, in many cases, that just their heritage, their culture, what they grew up with, they just find it hard to handle.
Yep. And I really hope, I'm going to vote early. I did it last time in 2012. I'm going to do it later this week.
Yep.
And I always try to explain to younger people, especially people who, you know, read about the civil rights movement and some of the great heroes of that movement, that if it weren't for them and the generation that preceded them, a lot of the things that you now take for granted because you have this chance and this opportunity would never have become possible or feasible without them doing some extraordinary things, including many of them paying the ultimate price so that you could have the opportunity to vote.
The Freedom Riders who were killed.
Choice.
Like Freedom Riders who were killed for trying to get civil rights for blacks in the American South. Yeah, there. And you don't have to be at war to give your life for that kind of stuff. People do and have.
And I think that's what young people need to understand, that this came with a cost, it came with a price, and that it's worth something. If you don't think that this matters to you, that it involves you, you have to become engaged.
And that's the kind of history we need to be teaching in school, and I'm afraid we're not teaching it in the way it needs to be taught. It's not given the urgency and immediacy that this stuff directly affected how you live today.
Yep, and I really wish young people would understand that if it weren't for the Martin Luther Kings, the Ralph Abernathys, the A. Philip Randolphs, the Ralph Bunches, that a lot of the things that you take for granted would never have happened.
Well, you
never
know, you, Greg, and me, and people like us, that's part of our job as elders, if you want to use that term, when we are interacting with young people and these kinds of things come up, to give them the benefit of our knowledge and experience and memory. You know, you and I have living memory, and they don't, and they can't be blamed for that. But we can try to pass that down when the opportunities present themselves, and that's all we can do.
That's all we can do, and I hope that they take what we're trying to impart with them and learn from it.
When they get old enough, they reflect. I've seen it in my stepdaughter. You know, she has occasionally admitted, you know, when you used to tell me this, that, or the other and nag me, it's like 10 years later. It's like, yeah, you were probably right. But that's okay. You know, better late than never.
Yep.
I appreciate you calling, Greg. You have anything you want to say before you go?
No, that's it. And I just hope we can take this historic time and learn from it and grow and become better American people and be better at what we're trying to do to make things better for everybody.
And the young voting age people or near voting age people who are watching this election, it'll be their living memory that gets passed down in future elections to talk about just how scary this was. And they'll pass that down. Thank you so much for calling, Greg. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we've got open lines, 713-526-5738. It is open forum. You can talk about anything you want. We still have that HISD Prop 1 thing hanging over us and will for the next couple of weeks. So we can talk about that. It's just a horrible, horrible situation. I'm all for this Robin Hood concept. Everybody should have an equal opportunity at a good education, regardless of the economic circumstances in which their neighborhood, in the neighborhood in which they live. But this is just a really horrible, horrible choice. It's like heads you win, tails I lose. There's no way it can come out. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org and clicking on the tip jar and then drop down menu to Think Wing Radio and contribute whatever you feel you can to support this show and this station. We can always use it and always appreciate it. Bob Gartner is on controls. Bob does a good job, and I appreciate that. And next up is Gary. Thank you for waiting, Gary, as always. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike. Happy Halloween.
Thank you. Happy Halloween to you.
Well, I have a pirate joke for you.
Do you?
I wanted to make an observation. You mentioned Duterte in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Now, it seems to me that if you give someone enough rope, they'll hang themselves. That's almost like poetic justice. You know, you got Barry Goldwater and Lyndon LaRouche and even Richard Nixon. Well, Duterte exposed his hand. I'm not going to say anything about Donald Trump exposing himself, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But give him enough rope. And Duterte was in the news, and you didn't mention this, about how he was flying back from Japan. He's on a jetliner, and God himself spoke directly to him.
Really?
And, yes, sir, while all the other passengers, and that God told him that he should not call the Pope an SOB and tell what he said about Obama. I can't say that on
the radio. So God gave him an epiphany about the language he's been using.
God himself spoke to this man, and he, you know, that just says it all, right?
It says he's schizophrenic. When you hear voices, that's schizophrenia.
Okay, I'm not going to go there. So let me tell you a pirate.
Just saying. Yeah, go ahead. Tell me the pirate joke.
This guy's down in Jamaica. He's having a beer at the bar, and he looks over, and there's a guy next to him in a big red coat with a black hat on top and a parrot on his shoulder, and he looks down. He's got a peg leg. He's got a patch on his eye. He's got a big old hook. He says, "Well, you're a pirate, aren't you?" He says, "Arr, matey." He says, "Well, that's amazing. I never met a pirate. I see you got a hook on your hand. What happened to your hand?" He says, "I were sword fighting with Captain Kidd, I were," and he cut her clean off. I said, "Whoa, and I see you have a wooden leg. What happened to your leg?" He says, "I were in the South Pacific, I were," and a shark bit her clean off. I said, "Well, that's amazing. And you got a patch on your eye. What happened to your eye?" He says, "Seagull pooped in it." He says, you lost your eye because a seagull pooped in it?" Says, "Well, we're the first day with me new hook."
You did that very well, Gary. I like the way you slid back and forth into that pirate accent. That was pretty impressive.
Oh, you want to hear an Irish joke?
But be careful. You know how it is with ethnic jokes.
Okay. Right. I'm Irish. I can do this. Mary's sitting on the park bench crying her eyes out, and her parish priest walks by and sees her, so he sits down. He says, "Mary, what's the problem, child? Why are you crying?" She says, "Oh, Father, it's me husband. He died last night." She says, "Oh, Mary, I'm so sorry. What happened?" She says, "Well, he went out to the pub, and he was drinking and gambling and smoking and wenching like he always is, and he came home last night, Father, and he died." She says, "Oh, Mary, I'm so sorry. Did he have any last words?" says, "Yes, Father." He said, "Mary, put the damn gun down." See you. Good night.
Good night. Okay, we still have open lines. He waited 15 minutes to tell me that. Okay, we've still got open lines, 713-526-5738. You know, Gary mentioned Duterte in the Philippines. He's been kind of cozying up to the Chinese, and apparently recently now the Malaysian president has been kind of cozying up to the Chinese. Essentially what they're looking for is financial investment. The United States has been engaging in what they call the pivot to Asia. So there is some discussion now whether we're pivoting enough, or for that matter, whether we can pivot enough. The fact is that, you know, we are thousands of miles away from Asia, whereas China, in many cases, shares borders with these countries. In the 1940s and 50s, containment of the Soviet Union was a U.S. policy, and they haven't called it that, but I think it's fair to say that that is kind of what the U.S. Government has in mind for China, is a form of containment, containing their influence as much as possible. There was apparently a transaction of 26,000 assault rifles that was going to be sold to the Philippines. And the senator from Maryland, Ben Cardin, made an objection to that, which, you know, in the Senate is enough to stop things. He is a Democrat. He is from Maryland. And he had reservations about sending these 26,000 assault rifles to the Philippines because of human rights violations under Duterte. Now, of course, one of the nice things about doing business with China is they don't trouble you so much about that. It's like, you're pro-China? We're cool, man. Just, you know, don't throw it in our faces, but we're cool. That's pretty much the Chinese attitude. Having been to China a couple of times, my impression is China is very much kind of a wild west in terms of what you can do. There are basically only like three rules. You can't embarrass the Communist Party. You can't embarrass China. And you can't embarrass the leadership. As long as you adhere to those three rules and you don't kind of go in their face, it's amazing what you can get away with in China. You know, we think of it as an authoritarian government. It is a dictatorship of sorts. But to call it authoritarian is not entirely accurate, because the term itself, authoritarian, really kind of implies total control. The Chinese government doesn't have that, and probably at this point in time doesn't want to actually exercise that. What they do, they're a dictatorship. They dictate certain rules. And as long as you adhere to those rules, you have a lot of latitude about what you can do. Just God help you if you, you know, do something to embarrass the country or the party or the leader. Like if a building falls down and it turns out that it was substandard materials because somebody was profiteering by using substandard materials in a substandard way, you can be executed for that. It's like you embarrass the province, you embarrass the leadership, you embarrass the country. That is a terminal offense. So when you talk about Duterte and this leader in Malaysia, I didn't catch his name, cozying up to China, one of their reasons would be China doesn't criticize you on whatever you do internally. That's kind of their national policy. So, you know, it's worth talking about that. One of the things we can talk about. We can talk about the HISD Proposition 1. I have to admit, I voted against. Wasn't an easy decision. I just felt, you know, normally HISD bond issue, I'm an automatic yes. You know, money for education, I always vote yes. This is a different thing. This is, you're going to have to send money out of HISD one way, or you're going to have to send money out of HISD another way. And one of the problems, this is one of the really tricky parts about this Proposition 1. If the money actually went to enhance education spending in poor districts, you could almost grit your teeth and get behind that. But here's the thing. There's a saying that money is fungible. In other words, once you put a dollar someplace, if it frees up a dollar someplace else, it's the same thing as having put the dollar in that someplace else. The state government, the Texas state government, apparently has created essentially two ledgers. They have the educational ledger and they have the general funds ledger. The way this proposition works, the state has to put a certain amount of money in that education ledger. If Houston were to send, in one context, over 4 years, up to $1 billion, it's not $1 billion in addition to what the state would be allocating. That $1 billion can replace $1 billion in spending, which would then go into the general fund. Now, you could argue, okay, well, it doesn't go into education, but it'll go into things like infrastructure and Medicaid spending, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, what we know is what this legislature would probably do is simply cut taxes on the well-to-do. So that's one of the things that makes this HISD proposition one so tricky. You can't even grit your teeth and vote for it and figure at least the money is going to education. Not necessarily. It's going into the education fund, which allows the state to pull money out of that education fund in an amount equal to what the HISD proposition would send. Whether it's for or against, doesn't matter. If it's for, you could argue it's less money. If it's against, you can argue it's more money. The people that are advocating an against vote figure that the state legislature will, due to various political and legal actions, be forced to recalculate how this works. That this has been called, the Texas state formula for this has been called borderline constitutional. So borderline constitutional means that when certain groups or individuals or institutions take the state to court, well, that border can move. And if it moves to, yes, it's unconstitutional, then they're going to have to recalculate it, and then an against vote will have fulfilled the purpose of those who are advocating it. On the other hand, if this ends up remaining the formula, then voting against this proposition will ultimately cost Houston much more than $1 billion over 4 years. It's just a horrible, horrible, horrible decision to make, and no matter which way you vote, it's bad. So, for those of you who are curious, actually, if you go to last week's show, the October 17th, the October 23rd show, and maybe even the 17th show, I've got links on there to discussions from several different parties for and against that sort of illuminate these issues. And eventually, when I have an internet connection, I'll be posting stuff from tonight's show. But we do have open lines, and we have 16 minutes to go. So help me out. 713-526-5738 is the number if you want to be on the air. Another thing that I was noticing today, do you know what the price basically for a barrel of oil is right now? Now, you remember a couple of years ago, it was like bumping up against $150 a barrel. It's down to roughly $45 to $50 a barrel, depending on the grade. Now, I looked this up, and in context, $45 a barrel for oil in 1973 dollars, like the oil shock time, is the equivalent of $8.09 a barrel. So, while it doesn't feel really, really cheap when you're paying, you know, $2 a gallon for gasoline, you have to put that in context. At least you'd have to try to put that in context. The equivalent of $8.09 a barrel in 1973 dollars. And there are a couple of different reasons for that. One reason is you've got a lot of different countries that are desperately needing to sell oil because at the lower price, they're getting murdered in terms of their budgets, in terms of their debt levels. Russia is one. All the Middle Eastern countries. Now you've got Iran selling oil. You have Iraq hoping to come back online selling large amounts of oil. Even Israel is selling natural gas to Egypt and Jordan. So you've got a lot more players that in many cases are not in OPEC. So they have to, you know, they're not obligated to follow OPEC's lead. And even some of the OPEC members don't follow OPEC's lead. You've also got an increase in renewable energy. And that has become a significant player in terms of replacing hydrocarbon fuels. It's still a relatively small fraction, but you know, when you're talking solar energy and fuel cells and wind power and wave power, and some of these, especially when you're talking about undeveloped areas where we're building a power plant or running a high-intensity power line, becomes prohibitively expensive. All of a sudden, you know, for these communities, solar cells and wind power become something they can use that makes them more affluent. You know, with more energy comes more capabilities, more ways to improve your life, more ways to do business, more ways to communicate, more ways to build things. So we're in a very heavy transitional period. Okay, we've got a couple of callers on the line. We got Frank and Jesse. So we got the James boys. No, not really. Just funny. Okay, Frank, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Yes, you brought up Eisenhower. I wanted to discuss Republican presidents.
Okay.
And Eisenhower was a pretty good president, but I really wanted to say, and part of the ongoing discussion about how the center has moved so far to the right, I want to say that William Jefferson Clinton was the best Republican president since Abe Lincoln.
Rachel Maddow has made that point a couple of times, actually.
Yeah. Now, if Teddy Roosevelt was really a terrific president, he would be on a par with Lincoln, except for the million Filipinos that he ordered massacred.
He was, for his time, a great progressive president. We owe a lot to him as a country.
Yeah.
Nobody was perfect. We had a lot of great white presidents or good white presidents who unfortunately were really racists. Kind of hard to balance that on the scale, but you know, they still did good things.
Yeah. It's culture.
It's culture. You know, times change. One of the things, being someone, I'm not a history expert, but I enjoy history and the concept of we are here because of what happened there. And I think it's always unfair in many ways to judge someone in history by the context of our time. We can compare them, but you can't judge them. You know, the founders of this country, in many ways reprehensible as slave owners, for their time, they were very, very enlightened people, even though they were slaveholders. Now, from today's culture, that almost disqualifies them as being great men.
Yeah.
But in the context of their times, they were very forward-looking. I mean, we have the oldest democracy in the world. We have the world's first constitutional government. The Democrats are the oldest political party in the world. And that's all due to these guys, many of whom were slaveholders, but were products of the Enlightenment of their time. Separating church and state, that was barely even a concept in the 18th century. So judging them by our standards, yes, we can compare them and see how far we've come, but judging people by our standards gets much trickier.
Yeah. Well, you know, a really great mistake is made by people that want to call Mark Twain racist in his writings.
Yeah, I've heard of that some of his books, like Huckleberry Finn, have been banned by some libraries because of the language used.
Yeah. You know, Ernest M. James, that he was disappointed that his book was pulled from reading lists. The autobiography of Miss Jane Phipps.
Well, I mean, you have to have mixed feelings about that. I think that on the one hand, history is history. And the fact that there is language that we do not use now, and that it's culturally and socially appropriate not to use some of that language now, I think that knowing how that language was used is an important part of history. How it was used, why it's objectionable, and why we don't use it today.
Yeah.
Without context, the teaching is meaningless.
It was an important part of history. You know, you go back to 1910, 1920, and before, then everybody talked that way, including Caucasians and African Americans who associated with each other.
I will tell you something interesting, I think interesting. You know, the word engine has become a pejorative. People consider that a bad way to refer to Native Americans. By the way, most Native Americans call themselves Indians, just saying. White people call them Native Americans. But, you know, the word Injun, I think, is etymologically related to the pronunciation of a word like soldier. You mentioned Dwight Eisenhower. Dwight Eisenhower pronounced that word soldier, soldier, with a hard D, whereas today we pronounce it with a soft D, almost a J, soldier.
Right.
What is considered a pejorative, calling a Native American an Injun, I actually think, etymologically speaking, is simply the way they were pronouncing that D at that time. You had soldiers and you had Injuns, as opposed to soldiers and Indians. You know, you see what I'm saying? So, again, removing the word from the context of the time, you can call it a pejorative now, but at that time, it was just a way of pronouncing a word. It's like the word vittles. Vittles is spelled V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S, victuals. But if you look it up in the dictionary, what is considered the correct pronunciation, in spite of that spelling, is vittles. Look it up. It's
yeah.
weird.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's why Twain spelled it in Huck Finn.
I'm sorry?
That's the way Twain spelled it in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah, and unless you know that spelling is this word, you would never imagine that it's pronounced as vittles. But that's
right,
considered
yeah.
correct. So, again, it's a matter of taking things out of historical context that a distortion of a word then is not necessarily intended as a pejorative. It was just a pronunciation. So perception is everything. All right, I've got one more caller I want to get to, the other James boy.
All right.
To Frank and
Appreciate
Jesse.
It.
Thank you so much for calling, Frank. Hope to hear from you again. Take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can support the station by going to kpft.org. I'm looking at Juan with glowing cat ears. That's rather entertaining. Jazz Latino is going to be coming up with Juan Flores, so hang around. In about 8 minutes, his show starts. I'll probably take 30 seconds of his time. That seems to be my operational. Sorry about that, Juan. I talk too much. Okay, Jesse, let's get you on the air. Thank you so much for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Yes, sir. Jesse James, no guns, no pistols, no knives.
It was just funny having you two guys calling back to back.
You're right, though, because the politics right now is crazy, but we forget that we're a democracy. It's the people. And as far as, I want to make it quick.
Well, you've got about 5 minutes.
The Indians, the Indians. Okay, we got in Dakota, North Dakota, people are fighting. This is their land. It was discovered, you know. It's like these guys were already here.
Well, I mean, you can say that about the whole hemisphere. But apparently the right-of-way, you know, they're saying, well, they're on private land. But apparently there's some dispute about this right-of-way, whether it actually belongs to this oil company or the right-of-way actually belongs to these Indians. So
well,
there is
well,
actually
I mean,
some room.
Land.
I'm sorry, there's actually some room for legal dispute there, apparently.
Well, yeah, because we have a democracy where we can take land from you.
Yes, but the way the law is usually interpreted is land can only be condemned for public use. So when
well,
you talk,
well, it's like I had a dispute a few years back where my neighbor he wanted to cut off my sewer because it runs under his land, but politically, I mean, I won the battle because I said, no, the sewer line, the city
has an
says,
easement.
No, I don't care if it runs under your land or not. We control that.
Well, technically, almost every property somewhere has easements. And,
right.
you know, when
right.
you buy a house, let's say right. your house is on a lot 70 by 100, chances are that the first 10 feet technically are under the control of the city and the utility companies. They have easements.
Right.
And in your case, sometimes you lose 5 or 10 feet on either side of your property line so
right.
that there are gas lines or electrical lines or telephone lines that run behind your house. And maybe you lose 5 feet behind your house also. And those are easements. Now, you know, there are such things as stranded properties.
Explain that.
Where a larger parcel has been subdivided. And there are parcels that are inside other parcels, but in the deeds, there are no easements to access them. So literally, you would have to come in like by helicopter.
So you have to look at your deed restrictions.
You absolutely have to look at your deed restrictions and just the, what do they call it?
Easements.
The surveys, because the surveys... Let me finish the sentence. The surveys will show you easements. So you have to look at the surveys as well as your deed restrictions.
Right. Okay, now, these guys that got acquitted...
Oh, my God.
And carrying guns...
Unbelievable.
But you got the Indians, whatever you want to call them, they were here first, that are peaceful and getting persecuted.
I can't...
I
wasn't in that courtroom. I mean, this may be one of the weirdest jury verdicts.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
It's got to be one of the weirdest jury verdicts since O.J. Simpson. It's just so counterintuitive. It's like everything we saw, everything we heard, all the videotapes, all the audio tapes. It's like, how can the... It's incredible. I've heard that this was a perfect case for jury nullification, and you have to question why the judge did not nullify that verdict. Because it was just so contrary, at least from the outside, to what the obvious verdict should have been. So
I mean,
all right, I'm going to give you now about 15 to 30 seconds, and then I have to start doing my sign-off stuff.
Well, the final thing is we're still voting, we're still unified, and we are American United States. We stand divided, we fall.
We are what we vote. And
yes,
as Benjamin Franklin once said, we have a republic if we can keep it.
Well, I went to vote, and the Republicans, Democrats, it didn't matter. There was a lady in front of me, and she needed to sit down, and they gave me a sheet. And I said, oh, that's her name. And when we went to vote, and it was like 8 people in front of me, they called her, and we were all united.
Yep. Okay, thank you so much for calling, Jesse. I need to read my sign-off quote tonight. Which is, appropriately, if you believe that government is like a business, voting is like any other marketplace product. With insufficient patronage, it will eventually cease being available. Something to think about. Okay, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM, Bob Gartner on engineering, KPFT.org, and thinkwingradio.com. Touch base. Have a good week.
Many, the search for spiritual clarity and insight is a familiar one. The Rothko Chapel is doing its part to help people find tools and practices to aid them on their journey. The chapel will be hosting Ma Nitya Shaktirupananda for a guided Hindu meditation at noon on Wednesday, November 2nd. The suggested donation to attend is $10. The practice of Hindu meditation focuses on self-awareness and unification. The aim is to realize one's relationship to other living things and the world. The event is part of the Rothko Chapel's ongoing educational meditation series, 12 Moments, Experiencing Spiritual and Faith Traditions. The Rothko Chapel is located at 3900 Yupon. For more information about the chapel and a full calendar of upcoming events and workshops, visit rothkochapel.org or call 713-524-9839. This is KPFT Houston.
Be part of a movement that can revolutionize the radio station you know. By joining KPFT's Sustainer program, you can support your station and help KPFT reduce its pledge drives. What's a Sustainer? Rather than giving a yearly gift, Sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving $20, $100, or $500 monthly helps change the way KPFT operates. From having to meet our operating expenses through days and days of on-air fundraising, to friends of the station boosting it off-air throughout the fiscal year. Contact our development director at 713-526-4000 to inquire about our Sustainer program. Did you know Sustainers can ultimately give a gift that is substantially larger than annual givers? That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, just call our development director.